reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. The chapter is titled Further Inquiries by Vidura, and it's a long chapter, and the questions in this chapter make up several, the answers to the questions make up several cantos, a couple of cantos, because they're very deep and profound questions and very relevant questions for understanding Krishna. So, quickly I'll summarize what the first question is that he's going to ask. And we'll make reference to yesterday evening's class where the phrase was used, juggling. Remember that one? The wonderful potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is bewildering even to the jugglers. And then Prabhupada used the phrase both in terms of the speculators being word jugglers, and Krishna also being a juggler, not a word juggler, but a one who moves or manipulates or transforms his energies in various ways. So whatever there is, nice statement, there's two things. There's Krishna and there's Krishnas, and there's not a third thing. Or that means there's no void in the creation of God. Another way of saying the same thing. Krishna and expansions of Krishna, and there's no such thing as void. That means no Krishna. Or no energy of Krishna. And there's like nothing. In the whole creation of God, there's no such thing. So, how Krishna moves his spiritual and his material and his marginal energies according to his desire, it makes all varieties and diversities and everything that exists, subtle and gross, material and spiritual. Maitreya has spoken those words. Now Vidura is responding with some questions on what he's just heard. So the first verse has no purport, text 1. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, he's addressing Maharaj Pariksit, while Maitreya, the great sage, was thus speaking, Vidura, the learned son of Dvaipayana Vyas, expressed a request in a pleasing manner by asking this question. Sri Vidura said, text 2, O great Brahmana, since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the complete spiritual whole and is unchangeable, two questions, how is he connected with the material modes of nature and their activities? Same question, how does something material come from something that's all spiritual? How are we to understand that? Second question, if this is his pastime, then how do the activities of the unchangeable take place and exhibit qualities without the modes of nature? I'll do it again. Listen carefully. It's a long, juicy purport. Two questions. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the complete spiritual whole and is unchangeable, very important Sanskrit term, Brahman is also unchangeable. And Bhagavan is also unchangeable. That which is absolute is not changeable, as matter is changeable. What's today is, or this moment is something different than the next moment. Today is different than tomorrow and different than yesterday. It's always vikarangs is the Sanskrit term. And the soul is unchanging. Krishna is unchanging. Brahman is unchanging. So he who is unchanging and the complete spirit whole, how is he connected with the material modes of nature and their activities, means their constant changes? What's the connection? Then, if the answer is, it's just his pastime, then I have a further question. How do the activities of the unchangeable take place and exhibit qualities without the modes of nature? What's activity that's without the modes of nature? What's saguna that's nirguna? Yes? Hey, that's a contradiction. Which one is it, saguna or nirguna? Because guna means it's material definition or material conception. Qualities means material qualities. And without material qualities means no qualities. Undifferentiated Brahman. That's the absolute. Right? That's the absolute. No qualities. But how do you have saguna Brahman? Wait a minute, that's a contradiction. Saguna Brahman. Brahman with qualities. How does it work? He knows how it works. So Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that he's seeking, laying the philosophical, very clear, strong groundwork that when Krishna appears in the 10th canto, or wherever he makes the description of Krishna's pastimes, we must understand properly, this is the philosophical foundation for Krishna's activities are fully spiritual. Otherwise, we're either rightly so criticized as sentimentalists that believe in mythology, which isn't the case, or we should just be honest and be impersonalists. So, Srila Prabhupada's two-page purport. As described in the previous chapter, what was the previous chapter about? It's about process of creation, specifically highlighting is the Virat Rupa, but the material energies, the marginal energy, the living entity, and Supersoul. And Supersoul is directing the whole show. As described in the previous chapter, the difference between the Supersoul, the Supreme Lord, and the living entities is that the activities of the Lord in creating the cosmic manifestation are performed by the Lord through the agency of his multifarious energies, but this manifestation is bewildering to the living entities. The Lord is therefore the master of the energies, whereas living entities are subjugated by them. So that's one. The previous reference to the previous dialogue, this is the distinction between the living entities and the Supersoul, and it's in terms of how the material creation affects either one. Living entities become bewildered, the Supreme Lord is not. He's directing those activities without becoming bewildered or affected in any way. Next. By asking various questions about transcendental activities, Vidura is clearing the misconception that when the Lord either descends on the earth in his incarnation or appears himself with all his potencies. He too is subjected to the influence of Maya, just like an ordinary living entity. So, Bhagavad Gita is the undergraduate and Bhagavatam is the graduate study of spiritual science. So the undergraduate study says, Abhijananti mam mutha manushim taramashritam parambhavam ajananto mamabhuta maheshwaram. So Krishna is saying, only strong word, mudhas, fools, and Prabhupada would, fools and rascals, would say that Krishna has assumed a material form. And their notion goes, there all there is Brahman, and Brahman becomes covered. Poor Brahman, Brahman becomes covered. Brahman becomes covered by Maya. And Krishna is just a rarefied, very elevated form of Maya covering Brahman. He's like way up there, but still covered. That's what Krishna is. And then if you ask such a person a question, if Maya covers Brahman, then that means that Maya is greater than Brahman. Can you please explain? And the answer is, oh, that's easy to explain. Maya is false, it doesn't exist. That which doesn't exist covers that which exists. Can you come again, please? Where does that which doesn't exist come from? Oh, don't worry, it just doesn't exist. Sounds circular to me. Then I'm supposed to say just, Baba, I'm God. And Maya's gone, right? Yeah, it's just, you renounce this world. This world is false. Take the sannyas order, then you can make spiritual advancement. You have to be really strict, though. Like, you know, no fooling around. Just be one. And the philosophical foundation is Maya doesn't exist, although you're covered by it. So, Krishna directly in Bhagavad Gita says that those who have that notion, they're fools and rascals. They do not know my higher nature, which is mamavaya manutamam, which is changeless and supreme. So now, here's the graduate study, the Bhagavatam, which is saying, through the process of questions and answers, reaching the same conclusion, but just a little, you know, more detail, more definition to the same understanding. He who is unchanging, as explained in the previous chapter, expands his energies and creates this material situation for the living entities who become bewildered by it. And he who is unchanging enters into that atmosphere, does not become affected by it, and performs activities which appear to be like the activities of the living entities that are illusioned. So one may think, aha, he's also illusioned. Or he's just a better version of one of us. And we just have to like become a better version like him. And we become equal to God, equal to Krishna. And, you know, in the final analysis, we just merge with Brahman. That's like intermediate. The real goal is get back to that shanti place where it's just Brahman. So that's offensive ideology, and the Bhagavatam is teaching us, no, when Krishna comes, the activities that he performs are not within this material, they're not affected by the modes of nature, or nirguna. But when he does perform activities and exhibits qualities, then the term saguna is appropriate, because it's with spiritual qualities but not with material qualities. Vidura is hearing the great sage Maitreya refute these impersonal arguments. The Lord is described in this verse as Chin Matra, which means completely spiritual. Like there are these terms, Sat Chit Ananda, and Chit means cognizance. But there's another way in which Chit is used. It's in general referring to the spiritual potency. Living entities are marginal, and there's external. So Antaranga Shakti can also be called Chit Shakti. That's the second way in which this word Chit can be used, and it's that use that's being referred to here. All spiritual means, specifically, no contact with the modes of nature, even the quality of goodness. Completely spiritual. Squeaky clean. No matter. Chin Matra. So that's the Lord. Just like Chintamani Prakara Sadhya Sukalpa Riksha. So the spiritual world is made of chit potency. So everything in the spiritual world is spiritual. There's no matter. There's no modes of nature. There's no time. And yet there's variety by spiritual potency. Impersonalists don't get it. But devotees, on the authority of the Bhagavatam, we're hearing, there's variety in the spiritual world. There's activity, although there's no time. There's qualities, although there's no matter, in modes of nature. Continuing, the personality of Godhead has unlimited potencies to create and manifest many wonderful things, both temporary and permanent. Because this material world is the creation of his external energy, it thus appears to be temporary. It is manifested at certain intervals, maintaining for some time, and again dissolved and conserved in his own energy, as described in Bhagavad Gita 8:19, Bhutva Bhutva Pradiyate. So that's the material portion. Now the spiritual portion. But the creation of his internal potency, the spiritual world, is not a temporary manifestation like the material world, but is eternal and full of transcendental knowledge, opulence, energy, strength, beauties, and glories. Such manifestations of the Lord's potencies are eternal and therefore are called nirguna. So go back and look at some of the language. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, language has its limitations. We use language to indicate something. It's language is a symbol of something. That's what language is. We say chair. There's no substance to chair. It's just, but it's referring to an object, a chair. So similarly, in language, there's the expansion of Krishna's internal potency, or here the language specifically is the creation of his internal potency. Sounds like time. Once upon a time, the Lord thought, gee, I need an abode. Boom, there's an abode, because he thought that thought, and it's manifest. And then it's eternal. But it's not once upon a time, there wasn't, and then there was. So it's one of these things that's an event, or an ontological event that's not a chronological event. Got it? It's an event. The Lord expands his potencies, but it's not like there was a time, because he's eternal, that the living entities, for example, didn't exist, and Krishna thought, gee, I'm lonely. I would be much happier if there were some living entities. Boom, there's living entities. And they're now eternal. Not like that. The living entities are co-eternal. The potencies of the Lord are co-eternal. The action of the external and the action of the internal potency are different. The action of the internal potency is whatever there is eternal. Okay? Eternal means like steel, right? It's like it doesn't move. It's eternal. It's fixed. But in the spiritual realm, it's not like steel and fixed. In the immovable sense, is it's not undergoing material transformation. There's no deterioration. There's no change. But there's variety. There's events that are eternal. We don't know about events that are eternal. We only know about this kind. They don't exist. They come into being. They stay for some time. They dwindle and they're gone. We know about those kind. But we don't know about eternal events. Well, we can hear about them, but we don't have the experience of them, at least to our recollection. But it's part of our nature. It's part of this descending knowledge from the spiritual world coming to us through the Srimad Bhagavatam and transcendental writing, Bhagavad Gita, where this spiritual realm is being described. And then, moreover, when the Lord comes from that spiritual world into this material world, which he creates by another one of his potencies, by his internal potency, he appears and manifests saguna activities, spiritual activities, with spiritual quality and spiritual knowledge, and the whole of the spiritual world is being manifest in this material atmosphere. And those who come in contact with it become also chin maya, becomes, or yeah, there's a phrase that's Prabhupada uses commonly, chin maya sharira. They're even the body becomes spiritualized. It acts like spirit. We've all heard this example, the iron rod put in the fire. Iron rod has no qualities like fire, but you put it in fire, hot, warm, hot, hotter, become blazing hot. You take the iron rod out of the fire, touch it to a piece of paper, whoosh, makes fire, because it's fire, although it's an iron rod. It's not fire, but it acts like fire by contact with fire. Similarly, by contact with this descending sound vibration, one's consciousness becomes transformed. And then, in that case, one can understand what chinmaya activities are. And not otherwise. Not by speculation. Not by word jugglery. This means that. That's what word jugglery is. I attended a program at a Bengali family's home once, and I kind of knew what to expect, and sure enough, you know, there was like an older group, pious Bengali family, and they brought their old, you know, pious Bengali family friends. And at the end of, so I said, this, okay, I have to do Krishna Consciousness 101 for this group. So it was a Bhagavad Gita class, and at the end of the Bhagavad Gita class, you know, the first question was, can you explain various interpretations of this verse? And I knew where it was coming from, you know, this means that. because that's what they're used to. And they, you know, that's their relish. Watching the juggler juggle words. Oh, that was a good one. Can you do another one? Watch this one. Ooh, got any more? Yeah, here's one. Wow, that was good. So he wanted one of those. And I said, the way that I've been trained by my spiritual master is Krishna knows what he means to say and he says it. If I don't accept that Krishna is capable to know what he means and he's capable of saying what he means, why would I read Bhagavad Gita? So we take Bhagavad Gita as it is. Krishna means what he says. It's not Krishna says this and he means that. He didn't like my answer. Oh, no jugglery? Come on. One. Just do one. Will you do just do one? No, you don't do jugglery. You can't understand. There's no contact with the internal potency that way. It just doesn't reach into the internal potency, no matter how good you are at stretching the mind. It doesn't encompass the realm of spirit. You can't reach there that way. But by this method of sending, so it's really important. Oh, it's really important. Where you hear from. Very important. And in disciplic succession is like, for starters, essential. And the persons in that disciplic succession, they're simply reproducing that same sound vibration. It's high fidelity broadcast of whatever was received. It's just transmitted. That's all. The spiritual world is transcendental, even to the material goodness, and thus is unchangeable. Since the Supreme Lord, of such eternal and unchangeable qualities, is never subjugated by anything like material influence, how can his activities and form be conceived to be under the influence of illusory Maya? As is the case with living entities. So, statement, it's the end of the first paragraph. Let us not make the mistake of bringing God down to the position of the living entity or jack up the living entity as being equal to the Supreme. They're different. And they're constitutionally different and their activities are similarly constitutionally different. Then Prabhupada brings in the refrain of the jugglery term. A juggler or magician displays many wonderful acts with his arts. Gives the example. He can become a cow. I've never heard of any such thing as a magician becoming a cow, but Prabhupada uses it. Who knows? Maybe there's somebody in India that did something like that. He becomes a cow. And he is not that cow. But at the same time, the cow displayed by the magician is not different from him. So he's leading us into Achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva. Similarly, the material potency. So this is, how do you get something material from something spiritual? Question. The material potency is not different from the Lord because it is an emanation from Him, but at the same time, that manifestation of potency is not the Supreme Lord, one with and different from. So, that which is all spirit. So, actually, this material energy has its connection with Krishna, and because of that, we can use it in His service. And when doing so, the spiritual connection is restored. That separated material energy becomes again connected. It becomes spiritualized by the act of using it in service to the Lord. the drum, a part of the Lord's paraphernalia, or the altar, or the paraphernalia used to make offerings to the deity, or our vocal cords, and our ears for hearing, you know, the various items that we use in devotional service when used in Krishna consciousness in service to the Lord, they act spiritually. Otherwise, how is it possible to become Krishna conscious if we can't use our vocal cords and use our ears for vibrating spiritual sound, receiving spiritual sound? Although it's acting on the soul, we're using instruments. And they become spiritualized. And the reason, the philosophical justification or the support for doing so is that they have this connection with the Lord. So like the cow and the magician, so the material energy and the Lord who expands, it's his inferior energy, but it's his energy. So it's not separated from him, but it's not him at the same time. The Lord's transcendental knowledge and potency always remain the same. They do not change, even when displayed in the material world. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purna Purnamada Chate. So that Purnam has its relationship with the origin of the original Purnam. But the original is not the one that's produced, and the one that's not produced is not the original, but there's no distinction. They're complete. Very basic. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord descends on the earth by his own internal potency, and therefore there's no question of his becoming materially contaminated, changed, or otherwise affected by the modes of material nature. The Lord is Saguna. I mean, this is, it's not word jugglery. It's not this one. He's Nirguna, he's Saguna. But to one who's not trained in Bhagavat Dharma, Bhagavat Katha, it may sound like, whoa, wait a minute. First you say Nirguna, then you say Saguna. What are you doing here? Without having a clear understanding of what those terms, what the import of those terms are, what's implied by those terms. The Lord has no material qualities and he has spiritual qualities. That's what's implied. Since he is not in touch with the material energy. He gives the example of the prisoner in the prison house and the king that goes into the prison house. The king may visit the prison house, but he's not a prisoner. He's not affected by the laws governing the prison. Proof? He walks out. And when there, he's not under the influence of the tight control that the prisoners are. He may observe the protocol while in the prison. I once visited a devotee from Venezuela who was somehow in a prison in upstate New York. It was a high security prison. I think the crime was something drug related, like dealing or something with drugs. So, it was an interesting experience. There's this big like hall that you wait till your name is called, and then you're called and they do the whole, you know, security scan and blah blah, and then they take you, you know, you're escorted by these big guys, one on each side of you, like you're just a little guy near these two big guys, and you go into, they open this iron gate, and you go in and it, oh. And then there's another one, you walk, you like another 10 to 20 paces, and there's another gate. And you wait, and the gate lifts. And and you walk through it, and like you can't get out. It's a high security prison. And I, there I am, there I doty, walking down, and these guys looking at me like they're a vulture and I'm a piece of meat or something. Ooh. And they took me to meet the priest, or the, like, the, whatever they call that, the yeah, no, no, there's a someone that looks after people.
Chaplain,
there we go, chaplain's office. He sat me down, and, you know, it was, looked comfortable, bars in the window, but looked comfortable. And he was sharing with me what it's like to be chaplain in a high security prison. And he said, did you happen to read in the paper about this murder that took place in Long Island, and they couldn't find out who the murderer was? And then they found the bodies in the backyard. Well, what happened was, the person that was in prison here, he was, you know, a little more gentle than some of the others, and so they gave, I gave him the opportunity to, like, do the gardening back there. There's a little garden. See that door? You can't get out, you know, but there's a garden back there. So he was doing garden. We developed this little relationship. And then he confessed to me that I did that murder, three girls, and buried in the backyard, somebody's backyard. And then, so the, he gave the information to the police. The police dug up the backyard, and there were the bodies of three girls that he had just murdered, like, you know, a month before. Now he's in the chaplain's office taking care of his garden. So he was like, you know, the Lord needs to protect us when we're in this situation. Okay. That's like different than a drug client. This is like a hardcore compulsive murderer. So, that when the chaplain was in, goes into that high security place, and I was also visiting in that high security place, it's not like I'm subject to the same laws as the prisoners. But at the same time, these, you know, I couldn't leave whenever I wanted to leave. I had to be, you know, the gate get, the two or three gates get lifted and escorted through. So, Krishna, when he enters this prison-like place that he creates by his own energy, he's the energy is under his control. He can make the gates lift or close. He did that. He's just a little, you know, not even a few hours old. He just told Vasudeva, don't worry, the chains are going to fall off. The gate, the prison doors are going to be wide open. The guards will fall asleep. Don't worry. All by my arrangement. So he can enter and he can leave the prison at will. Doesn't need security to, like, get him in and out. That's Krishna. So when present in this world, he's not subject to the constraints or laws. He performs pastimes. So that's what Maitreya is, excuse me, Vidura is saying to Maitreya. When he comes, if you say his coming is according to his pastime, then how is it? It's a wrong understanding to say that he's his activities, which are very, very amazing and filled with spiritual qualities, are under the modes of nature. No, not so. Not so. How is it possible? In the Vishnu Purana, we're almost done. In the Vishnu Purana, the six opulences of the Lord are stated to be non-different from Him. The opulences of transcendental knowledge, strength, opulence, riches, potency, beauty, and renunciation are all identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When He personally displays such opulences in the material world, they have no connection with the modes of material nature, the very word. Chin Matrava, once again, so it's twice in the purport. Completely spiritual. It's a guarantee that the Lord's activities are always transcendental, even when displayed in the material world. His activities are as good as the Supreme Personality Himself. We don't make a separation between Brahman and the activities of Brahman, or Bhagavan and the activities of Bhagavan. We don't make a distinction like that because they're all chinmatrava, all completely spiritual. Impersonalists don't like that. Personalists like that. And whether you like it or don't like it, it's the statement of the Bhagavatam that Maitreya is, you know, getting out a very fine, like, dissecting instrument and making clear spiritual activity, including the act of creation, and including his entering into that which is created. Prabhupada says, otherwise, why would Shukadeva Goswami have been attracted to them? And similarly, why would Maitreya Muni have been attracted to them? Last, Vidura inquired how the Lord's activities can be in the modes of nature, as is sometimes miscalculated by persons with a poor fund of knowledge. So, this is one of the reasons why one should read the first 9 cantos before reading the 10th canto. If you read the earlier cantos, that misconception will be erased. And if you don't read and have proper understanding, guaranteed you'll have a misconception. Guaranteed, even if you're like, you know, way up there. Even if you're Brahman realized, you'll have a misconception. Without the process of hearing, at best, your definition is by negation. Then you hear Krishna's activities and it looks like material. The process of hearing is essential. And very mercifully, Srila Prabhupada has provided us with the means. This wonderful Srimad Bhagavatam, easily accessible. The language is easily accessible. People all over the world can get renderings of the original Srimad Bhagavatam in their language with a commentary from our lineage of acharyas. I prepared this, made a seminar in Seattle, and for the seminar I looked through, just did a little research to find out how many different acharyas Srila Prabhupada refers to in his purports. The list is a long list. It's like, you know, 17, 18 different acharyas commenting on Srimad Bhagavatam, that we don't have to like become super scholar and go read all those commentaries. Our acharyas have made it very easily accessible to us, and Srila Prabhupada has then taken it and pablumized it. For those of us that don't have a strong digestion power, it's just like baby food. You get all the nourishment without having to, you know, like go through all that exercise. It's very wonderful. And it's in simple language. And sometimes you read some things that are written that are like, you know, besides it's old English sometimes, it's like, not accessible. It's so accessible. With all of that, the highest transcendental knowledge, with all of the resources of our great acharyas, made so simple. The little bit that I've read of the writings of our acharyas, it's there in Prabhupada's purports. It's just embedded and in such simple language that if you didn't know what Jiva Goswami or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, you wouldn't get it. But when you do know it, there it is. And there it is. It's like, you know, a Christmas tree. with all the decorations. It's beautiful. And just like, put it in your hand. That's yours. What a merciful act that Prabhupada provided us, this transcendental knowledge. And therefore, one of the things he wanted very much was that we distribute his books, and not just distribute them, read his books, receive that, and give the same opportunity to others. Okay, I'll end there and see if there's any comments or questions. You were very good. After two strikes, you were really good. Thank you. Yes.
Maharaj, like you said that it's important from where we hear.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is in two different contexts. Like when our own the practicing in a context of a practicing devotee and someone who is not practicing.
Okay.
So. For someone who is not practicing, they may also hear Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, but as you said, they still don't get it. So then what is...
Depends on what... To respond to your question, I would like to know, where is that non-devotee person hearing from? Are they reading Prabhupada's books and hearing the followers of Srila Prabhupada, or are they hearing someplace else? They're hearing from some other place. Okay, with that, now, what was your question again?
So they don't understand that what is the, what are scriptures saying, even though maybe it's clear to us that what scriptures say.
So what's your question?
Like, what is the qualification to understand scripture? Even if in this context, let's say, if they hear some Rasesula Prabhupada's books, in changing the situation. But if they hear, people hear from bona fide knowledge what Srila Prabhupada is presenting, but still they do not understand it or get it.
Yeah.
So then what is the, why they do not?
Why? Because they're holding on to something else. If I'm holding on to this like box of cough drops and I want to get the water, I have to put that down so I can get the water. But supposing I don't want to put this down, it's very dear to me. You know, I've got my conceptions of life. And I'm reading this book that's like has different conceptions than my conceptions. I don't want to let go of my conceptions. My interest is to see how much it matches my conceptions. And if it matches my conceptions, I think it's good. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't match my conceptions, I don't get it. I don't get it because I don't want to get it. I'm holding on to some other conceptions. There's not an interest to learn and to grow and to like go beyond my limitations. It's like I'm looking for validation of my limitations, my conceptions. It's like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. There's something he didn't get also. Like, there's the battlefield, and perform your prescribed duty. He was resisting, and the reason is he had another conception. He was invested in that other conception. And he was with Krishna. He was taking the role of one who's like us, but that's why people don't get it, because they don't want to get it. Okay?
And then, in the same, but we also hear, like you said, when we are in contact with fire, someone is in contact with fire, they get those qualities. So if someone keeps hearing repeatedly same thing.
Yeah, well, you know, you can have heat shields when you're in contact with fire too. Still, some heat is going to come. The problem with such persons is in the area of offenses. They may not get warmer in contact with that which they're reading again and again because they're making offenses and criticizing Krishna or Krishna's pure devotee representative who's delivering that message or something like that. Then everything is, you know, Krishna leaves. The spiritual potency will not act when that offensiveness is there. They'll go away.
So in that case, then we should just leave them, not
preach. You should give them prasadam. Everybody likes prasadam. Some people don't like prasadam too. Yes?
Do you want to ask for explanation? Just on the extension of the last point, you was saying like when the iron gets in touch with fire, so it retains those properties of fire.
Yes.
So similarly, the for materialistic person or the human being, when he is getting this knowledge slowly, so he is getting spiritualized.
Yeah.
So can we reference like our Goswami, they're all like, totally spiritual person because they have been like maybe Srila Prabhupada.
Don't go way back to the beginning, but the punchline of your question I didn't get.
So, because when they are getting this knowledge, they are, you said like as the rod is getting similar properties as fire.
Yeah.
So the person who is practicing this Krishna consciousness like for a long time, he is attaining this spiritual potencies, and then slowly he is getting spiritualized.
Okay.
So can we reference our acharyas like Shad Goswamis or like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj or Srila Prabhupada? Are they in those
categories,
like by those
who are
spiritual?
Yeah. But back to Nandan's question, there are persons that came in contact with Srila Prabhupada that didn't exhibit bhakti. They thought of him as a very wonderful person or something like that. Some of them even became a noble in contact with. That's your question. Your question is, can we think of them in that way? Yes. There's this other way of thinking of them, particularly, let's say, in the case of, let's say, Rupa Goswami. We know that Rupa Goswami is Sri Rupa Manjari. So in one sense, we can look at it in a different way. He's exhibiting a life of one who is like us, but he's not one like us. It's another way to look. And when at least, whether it's this way or that way, when in contact with our Chaitanya, the fullness of his spiritual potential came out. In contact with fire, he became like fire. Okay. Yes?
Maharaj, I have two questions.
Two questions.
The first question is, Maharaj, as you were mentioning about the qualification of the speaker, as devotees, as we belong to Srila Prabhupada's family, we also have devotees who belong to the to our sampradaya, but come under different lineage, like Gopal Bhatti Goswami's lineage or not. Can we listen or hear to them speak?
There's a wonderful booklet that Shivram Maharaj wrote, Shiksha Outside of ISKCON. Have you seen it or?
I've seen it, Maharaj, but I haven't.
I have an electronic copy, which I can make available to Nandan, and he can forward to whoever wants a copy. The theme of the book, it's short, it's little. Booklet is, let's say, yes and no, and primarily no. the no part is in terms of faith, and the no part is in terms of not receiving that very special mercy that Śrīla Prabhupāda embodied uniquely. Why step outside of that? Why not receive the fullness of that is the main thing. And the other that goes to faith, if as Prabhupāda said, if even one word is different, then it may bring doubt into one's mind. Wait a minute, this person who was in Gopal Bhatta's lineage said that, and Prabhupada said this. Whereas, what Śrīla Prabhupada did is he took those, you know, different acharyas and amalgamated it. So we don't have to go through that. It's one who is, it's like a child who they know their mother and father. And it's a good quality that a child is a little shy. And, you know, someone comes along and they're hiding behind their mother's leg. They don't want to even, like, see them or have them see them or, you know, because it's just they're attached to their... So, however, when someone comes to their home many, many times, the child becomes used to that other person. They see the affection and affinity between their mother and father. And then the child becomes very comfortable being with that other person and eventually can accept them like their mother and father. Still, they have their mother and father. That's like the final authority. But this other person can be... So, as we mature in life, we can accept multiple principal relationships when we're very mature. That's possible. In an immature stage, it's not healthy. One can go away from one's mother and father. That's not healthy for the child. Even if the other person is a good person, it's not healthy for the child. They should have that connection very strongly. So now let's go to the work that Vridhananda Maharaj had to do, was assigned to do by the GBC to complete the Bhagavatam, and he and Gopi Pranadana Prabhu. And so we're reading the commentaries of other acharyas. In a mature stage, it's just, you know, how that resonates with Śrīla Prabhupāda. And following in the mood of Śrīla Prabhupāda, it resonates with Śrīla. That's the standard. When one is mature, there's no infidelity by having hearing from another place. And if there's some discrepancy, the measure is over here. Doesn't matter what that is. It's just over here. Gopi Pranadana is a wonderful example. His faithfulness to Śrīla Prabhupāda and, you know, all the work that Gopi is exposed to, that's his standard. It's wonderful to see it. But, you know, he has maturity, spiritual maturity, by the grace of God. Because if he didn't, he would, the same thing would have happened to him that happened to some other persons that were Sanskritists and started reading other things, and now they're gone. Because, you know, without history, repeating the awful things of history, it happened. One became a complete Sahajiya. He came to Mayapur dressed as in a sari, from reading other books, hearing other, you know, Gaudiya teaching. It was his Upasampradaya teaching that he happened to hear. But it was like, you know,
cuckoo.
So one should be very careful. So that's the no. In the mature stage, that's possible. But then with great faithfulness and fidelity. It's like, I gave the example of a child, here's the example of a wife. If a wife starts thinking, well, I like my husband, but, you know, this person over there, he would make a nice husband too. I wonder what it would be like to be the wife of that husband, that man. So that can happen if one hears from other sources. You know, Srila Prabhupada, yeah, but what about this other one? It can happen. So, or have doubt, and, you know, this one, he's good, and he says this, and Prabhupada said that, so my faith is damaged. What do I do now? Because it's too late, I already heard. And from hearing, one's faith is nourished. So one should hear.
By act of using in service of the Lord, which is used, gets reconnected to the Supreme. It sounds a little silly, but when the soul, after it, when it goes back to the spiritual world, will they regain the position when the soul was there in the spiritual world, back to the same service? Or the reason I asked that, Maharaj, was...
If the answer is yes, except if you put it in the context of time, the very frame of the question is misleading. But take away the time as we know it, and the answer is yes. We have our constitutional position. That constitutional position is restored fully. So the answer is yes. But the frame of the question is, once upon a time, and then some time passed, and then some more time passed, and then we're back, and it's, you frame it in time, and then it's an illusory image of what transpires. Prabhupada said it this way. When you become Krishna conscious, it's as if a flash has passed and you're continuing.
Pastime of Shishupal, the Lord killing Shishupal. We see that Shishupal merges into the Lord. He goes back to the Brahman. But his position was guarding the Vaikuntha. Does he go back to that position, or he's...
You know the answer.
But then why does he go back to the Brahman?
It's a lila, where the Lord is demonstrating something. Later on, after the Rajasuya Yagya is over, Yudhisthira is seated with Narada and asks, how did this happen? And Narada says, just see the power of the holy name. Even your Shishupal and your calling and derision and scorn, powerful. Liberation. What to speak of calling. So it's a That's not his ultimate destination, in short. His ultimate destination is to return. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his leela, the Shishupal and Dantavakra became pure devotees by Lord Chaitanya's association instead of being killed by them. So became a devotee or became a devotee, one by killing, the other by kirtan. But they were released from that curse of the four Kumaras, and they returned, Dantavakra and Shishupal.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me see if there's somebody else that hasn't spoken yet. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
When the soul leaves from one body to another body, transmigrates.
Okay.
So when the subtle body is not completely purified, so does the subtle body has the same consciousness as the human when it goes into a pig or like dog?
No. Two things. Subtle body doesn't have consciousness. The soul has consciousness. But the configuration of the subtle body matches consciousness. And then the gross body is applied to match the consciousness of the soul, the configuration of the subtle body, and then you get a gross body. Guna and karma matching. You're not done yet. Keep going.
Yeah. Like when subtle body acquires the human form of the body, so a certain level of degree of understanding, the God consciousness. So
well, that's like on the higher end of the human form of life. There are lots of humans that don't have that. Or spirit souls with a subtle body to get a human body, but their behavior is more animalistic than human. And their God concept is like, where did it go? So, when you're evaluating or analyzing all of this, bear in mind there's a big spectrum. Dvipadapashu means those that get a human form, but their consciousness is still animal. And the distinction is when one accepts the divisions of varnashram, like the duties of this human body to the Supreme. And there are those that don't have that, lots of those that don't have that. So from a Vedic perspective, that's not human form yet. It's dvipadapashu. Human existence is what you described. So they can have a human form without that capacity yet. And if they don't enter into that realm, then in their next life, in fact, they'll get an animal body, four-legged one. Yes?
Maharaj, when he's talking about the he said the subtle body, talking about the mind, intelligence,
yes.
And false.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it would seem that those things, when the soul becomes self-realized, are absent from that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lord Kapila Dev explicitly says that to Devahuti. Only by the process of bhakti, the subtle body is dissolved. What a relief, huh? The mind, material mind, is dissolved. And it's not even like Alka-Seltzer in a glass of water, because then you got it floating around. It's gone. No material mind. Because material mind is needed when you have a desire separate from the Lord. And you think of enjoying that something. That's the material mind's function. But when the mind doesn't have such desires separate from the Lord, or the soul has no desire separate from the Lord's desire, then the material mind is not needed anymore. And without the material mind, you also don't need the material body anymore. The spiritual body is active, and the spiritual mind is active. The material body and material mind are dissolved. Yay! Okay, someone else? Yes?
I need some pointer like about how can I offer actions to Krishna?
How can you not?
Means the mind, like, it's always sometimes not like natural for me.
Yeah, that's the mind.
Mind.
Just like my dear, it's like a dog.
Okay.
Sit down. Stop barking. And you proceed.
Okay.
You have to listen to the mind.
But like some natural flow goes on, like water flow goes on, and then within 2 hours it's...
Yeah. That's the mind wants to be in charge. And just keep saying it. Mind? Look, you've been in charge for how many lifetimes? And you've look at the mess you've made. This lifetime you're not in charge. Krishna's in charge. So just sit down. The whole lifetime, not just for 5 minutes. The whole lifetime, Krishna's in charge. You got it? Just like you're subordinate to Krishna. And you just keep training the mind. You're exercising intelligence over the mind and putting Krishna above the whole deal. The mind isn't going to like that. They'll try to go around this way, through the window, come through the roof, through the basement, say, come in and take over. Practice.
We have heard about Shishupal, but I've never heard about Dantavakra.
Not much is described. I don't have much to say about Dantavakra. He was also killed by Krishna. He was also a member of the same dynasty. Not much is described. Not that I know of. Maybe one of our Goswamis have written something very wonderful about Dantavakra.
My question is like kind of follow-up to Nandakumar's first question about person being given an opportunity to receive and still they might be having shields and not being able to take it. So when it's directed to our own selves, like I feel like in our journey we face it every step. Like it's like it's not a one-time
sure,
process.
Sure, sure, sure.
So then
you have to renew your commitment to Krishna.
Yeah, and then even the, like, sometimes it feels like that holding on is kind of like, it. So we have to help ourselves in that situation, like, in the sense, like, the help
That's
is
right.
coming, but
That's
then
right.
if
That's
I'm
right.
not ready to receive it,
That's right.
nobody can help me.
That's right.
So then in that situation, when, I mean, and another thing is, like, one understanding is that we are holding on to our own conceptions, which are not really the right conception.
That's right.
So how do we move on that places when we are stuck on those places?
Well, you it's two things, effort and mercy. You make effort, and as you continue to make effort, you realize that's not sufficient. I'm still stuck. And give up making effort when you see that. You redouble your effort. And humility starts taking over. You know, it's instead of depression or despair or despondency or, you know, throwing in the towel, you call out for mercy with the mood of humility. The Dhammadhar Leela is perfect to portray that.
And that's what the Jasoda teaching us. And when Krishna's mercy was extended, it was easy. There's details to that, neither that Vishwan and Chakra describes are very beautiful, but it's just in simple. And to stay steady in that making effort and calling for mercy, that's our sadhana. There's details of things that we do and don't do, but that's the essence of it. We're striving. As Krishna says, he who strives by right means, success is assured. The assurance is his assurance. Not like his assurance. He will give his mercy. We can rest assured. We have to want his mercy, not just, you know, be in the doership mode. But we make endeavor and we're depending on Krishna's mercy. And Krishna will be merciful because that's his nature. However long it takes. The limitation is not on Krishna's side, it's on our side. Okay. Well done, yes? Last question.
These are two related questions. One is that we hear that Jiva has pure consciousness.
Jiva has pure consciousness.
So like the example I've heard is like a bulb which is then painted from.
Yes, okay.
But then you also, what I understood is in your answer, one of the answers you said that depending on our consciousness, we get subtle body. Depending on our level of consciousness.
When using that explanation, that's the cover. Because there's the constitutional position of the soul, but the consciousness is extended, like the sun, the rays of the sun radiate outwards. So the consciousness of the soul similarly can become contaminated. There's contaminated consciousness, although the soul is pure. So according to the contaminated consciousness, we have subtle and gross bodies. Try to say the same thing in different words. Use the example that you like, you were referring to. There's a light bulb. In fact, there's five of them in that nice chandelier hanging down. And they're all kind of a frosted color. So the filament inside is not burning a frosted color, it's burning a, whatever we want to say, frequency of light or white light. And then it's color. So we can take, you know, paint that one pink, paint that one green, paint that one blue, red, and yellow. And now we have this nice spectrum of colors. Although the filaments inside each one is the same. So as that light spreads out, then it's yellow light, blue light, green light, red light, pink light. Although the light is the same. So how consciousness of the soul, which then becomes contaminated, consciousness becomes contaminated in contact with matter according to the modes of nature, as the colors according to the modes of nature, then we're awarded a gross body, subtle body too. So both statements are not mutually exclusive. The soul, by nature, is pure spirit. Another is the consciousness that comes from the soul and is, you know, inseparable from the soul, as the rays of the sun are inseparable from the sun, the consciousness of soul
can become contaminated, although the soul is intrinsically pure. And now, extend that. According to a contaminated consciousness, one is awarded a different person set of bodies. Guna and karma related.
So can we use desire and consciousness interchangeably?
In that case you could, but it's not in all cases the same.
And then just last question, Maharaj, the false ego is it's a consciousness.
False ego is what? It's a material element. It's not consciousness.
So we hear like false ego means that we think I am.
That's how it's manifest. It's matter. It's subtle matter, but it's just matter. And its influence upon contaminated consciousness is fill in the blank. It's not consciousness. False ego is not consciousness. False ego is subtle matter. One of the eight varieties of gross and subtle matter.
Maharaj, on that thought, when the mind is engaged materially, contemplating the object of the senses
for enjoyment purposes,
then that is in effect the false ego manifesting itself.
No.
Excuse me.
False ego fundamentally is a misconception of self. So where does false ego end and where does the mind begin? They're mixed. It's more subtle. How does like odor and air, which is colorless and odorless, you know, where does odor begin and air end or something?
they're intermingled.
But more subtle is false ego. And, you know, then it's layers. Less subtle layers upon the more subtle layer. The false ego is a like primordial misconception of self. And then how that manifests is in, you know, within the mind, the mind carries different conceptions of self as the air carries different aromas. So the air is more subtle than the aroma. And the conception of self is more subtle than the mind. Yes?
I just wanted to, in continuation of this question,
yeah.
How is it happening that the jivas fall off the spiritual world?
Oh, do they assume, classic question.
Yes, but do they assume false ego or subtle bodies, or why do they want to enjoy separately from Krishna? This is, I know it's a fundamental question.
Yes, it is. And here's what problem. Do we have a Bhagavad Gita? In 13. Verses in chapter 13 where the word anadi is found. And then that finding it. In the purport, Prabhupada explains, while we're in this material world, the answer to your question can't be understood. So don't bother asking the question. But when one is released from this material condition, one will understand. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about events that are not bound by time. That's what the word anadi means, original. And anadi means that which has no origin, no beginning. Govindam adi purusham, the original person. What's anadi? There's two ways of thinking of anadi. One is absolutely eternal. Another is you go back in time and back in time and back in time and back in time and back in time. And so far back in time you can't find the beginning. That kind of anadi, that you can't get in your mind machine and go there, zoom, 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 and say, oh, that's what. It's like Lord Brahma, when he was born on a lotus flower. And because he's extremely intelligent, he began asking, who am I? Where did I come from? And he looked and looked, there's this lotus flower. If I follow the stem of the lotus down, 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 I'll find where I came from. So he climbed down the stem. And what happened? He couldn't find the end to it. Where did I come from? How did I get in this circumstance? Or your question, the living entity, the fall of the jiva. It's not something that one can, with this instrument, the mind, go, 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 go. There it is. From our conditioned circumstance, we cannot. Did you find the verse? 13, 13. Okay. Anadi matparam brahma. Anadi is beginningless, without beginning. Adi and without beginning. Matparam, subordinate to me. Brahma, spirit. So here's Prabhupada's statement in the purport. There is no specific date at which the jiva was born. No one can trace out the history of the jivatma's manifestation from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, it is beginningless. The Vedic literature confirms this. Jayate Mayate Bhava. Vipaschit Katha Upanishad.
Considering every single living entity the same, that one could give even a pat answer about that, because we're all individuals. If no two snowflakes are alike, how much more the spirit souls?
One devotee was traveling with Srila Prabhupada in America from New York, and they went to Boston, and then they went to Montreal and Toronto, and all the way the group of devotees that were with Srila Prabhupada were discussing this question. Finally, once in a group conversation, Prabhupada said, the reason reason this is a difficult question to answer or to understand is because we don't want to understand it. We want to equate ourselves with the Supreme Lord, and this is the reason for our fall. We want to be equal to the Supreme Lord. That the living entity can fall, whereas Krishna cannot fall, is the difference between us and Krishna, and we don't want to accept that. Prabhupada said. So when we get over the problem of wanting to be equal with Krishna, then we'll be able to understand that which we know we cannot understand, because we're holding on to another conception. But we'll let go of that conception and enter into the spiritual realm. Thereby, we can understand how it's misuse of free will.
Rāj-śrīmad-bhāgavatam-kī-jāyā.